You may be seated. I will now call the second case on today's oral argument calendar. That is case number A25-0093, Lorenzo Tejeda versus David Maceda. As counsel are aware, each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal argument, and appellant will have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal argument. I'll mention that our lectern is adjustable up and down. There are two buttons on the front edge of the slanted surface that you can use to adjust to your preference. At the beginning of your argument, please identify yourself and your client, and then you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Aaron Thome, and I represent the appellant in this case, David Maceda. Mr. Maceda is a one-third owner of a restaurant business. Another of these owners of the business is Mr. Tejeda, who is a plaintiff in this case. And there was a third individual who relinquished his ownership interest, his one-third ownership interest. Mr. Maceda did not own any other businesses. This was his only business venture. Mr. Tejeda owned several businesses. He was basically an absentee owner of this business.
I have a question for you. I need to frame this up for myself. Respondent counsel indicates or states that the legal standard for us is de novo review because we're reviewing the statute. And I am trying to wrap my head around the fact that the district court made a determination on facts as he saw it. Why are we applying a de novo review when the district court made a determination, for instance, that preference in paying family members meant that there was no reimbursement?
The standard under Leyendecker, Your Honor, is de novo review. And the reason why is because this involves statutory construction. And I'll get into why that is the case over the course of my argument, but Leyendecker sets out the standard clearly. That case also involved allegations of misuse of funds, specifically embezzlement and theft. But what's important at this juncture, the advancement stage, is how do we treat disputed issues of fact? How does that work under the statutory language?
That's what I'm struggling with, because the district court makes the findings of fact. We don't.
That's correct, Your Honor. The district court made findings with respect to disputed facts when the district court could not do that at this stage. That's Leyendecker establishes that, CoreVascular establishes that, and the statute, 322C.0408, does.
What's disputed about what the district court relied on?
Mr. Tejeda...
As I understand it, there is no dispute that family members were paid.
Your Honor, Mr. Tejeda submitted an accusation, and Mr. Maceda, my client, refuted that accusation, and here's why. The people that were paid by Mr. Maceda were employees of this business. There was no preferential payments to family members.
They were family members. He admits they were family members.
He paid family members that were employees of the business. Mr. Maceda paid employees of the business.
That were family members.
It would have been...
We're splitting words, but I mean, they are family members. He admitted that.
Yes, he admitted that he employed family members and former family members. He did it during the COVID-19 pandemic. They made less money than the typical employee, and they were paid employee wages as a result of their work. It's a dispute whether or not Mr. Tejeda's version of the facts, which is that these were somehow preferential or wrongful payments, versus my client saying, as a matter of law, I have to pay employees. Payment of employees is not wrong. But here's the ultimate, most important issue here. The district court said there may be ameliorating circumstances that make what Mr. Tejeda,
That has to do with the ultimate resolution of this case. I mean, I read the court's order, and he gets that very, very, very last small paragraph that says there is perhaps ameliorating circumstances if proven at trial.
That's right, Your Honor. So what the statute says is if the party seeking advancement establishes that the facts known, the known facts, not taking into consideration disputed facts, the known facts do not preclude ultimate indemnification at the end of the case, The party seeking advancement is entitled to advancement at the start.
The known facts in this case are that Maceda did not act in good faith, that Maceda received an improper benefit from his actions, and that Maceda did not reasonably believe that his actions were in the best interests of Katrina's.
And those are not known facts. That is Mr. Tejeda's version of the facts. The same exact issue came up in Leyendecker. The same thing happened where they said, we believe that this employee embezzled funds. We believe that this employee committed theft. And this court held that is not sufficient at the advancement stage because all you're doing is relying on allegations. Mr. Tejeda made allegations. Mr. Maceda explained he was authorized to make these payments. He ran the day-to-day operations. It was his job to pay employees. All he did was his job. He paid employees, acted in good faith, did not benefit improperly in any manner, and that's the dispute. And
turning the discussion slightly, because this is the other part that bothers me. The cases that you rely on all have to do with functioning businesses or a nonprofit. Maceda is the one that closed the restaurant, and I don't recall where it was, but somewhere in the briefing, the argument is, well, this whole thing is moot because there is no business, which is different than the cases that we've reviewed. What do we do with that?
Your Honor, there is a legal business, and in fact, it's suing Mr. Maceda because Mr. Tejeda caused it to sue my client. So
you don't dispute that Maceda closed the business?
The restaurant. Mr. Maceda had to shut down the restaurant, but it's an ongoing operating LLC. The business has not been closed.
Excuse me, I'm going to interrupt just a minute. The marshal, I think, has not yet started the clock. I think, is there a way to start at, say, 12? No, 3 minutes, I think, has elapsed approximately. Okay. Sorry, you may continue, Mr. Tell.
That's okay, Your Honor. And again, just returning to what the district court actually did find, that there could be ameliorating circumstances, meaning, and he pointed to what Mr. Maceda presented. And he said, based on Mr. Maceda's affidavit and pleadings, there can be ameliorating circumstances, meaning the door to ultimate indemnification remains open. That's all that this court needs to decide today, meaning Mr. Maceda is entitled to advancement of his fees that he expends in fending off the claims brought by Mr. Tejeda and Katrina's, the entity.
The trial court said Maceda acknowledged that he hired his family members. You don't dispute that.
Don't dispute that.
All right. And then the trial court says paying his family from Katrina's checking account in preference to retaining funds within the business represents a failure to act in good faith.
But then we have to read the final finding of the district court. There may be ameliorating circumstances that make that proper. And that's why ultimate indemnification is not foreclosed, and that's why advancement today is required. So did not find and make an ultimate finding of impropriety. The district court only, for some reason...
You have the burden. You acknowledge the burden is for you to establish entitlement.
Yes. The burden is to establish entitlement, and the question is, what does entitlement to advancement require? This court made that very clear in Corvascular, said you don't need to prove eligibility for ultimate indemnification to get advancement of fees, and that is exactly where we are today.
If I can frame the issue this way, and this maybe not using the language of the statute or the case law, but I guess, the difficulty is, what do we do? What should a district court do when the facts concerning the criteria are disputed, and perhaps hotly disputed here? Should the district court say take them in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, the company here is the plaintiff, or take them in the light most favorable to the defendant employee seeking advancement, or should the district court then resolve disputed facts and make its own findings in order to make the advancement?
The district court cannot resolve disputed issues of fact.
So not the middle ground.
Right. So what the district court needs to do is it needs to determine at this stage what are the known facts.
Known by whom?
Known to the fact finder.
I think the facts known language is in the paragraph that has to do with the company's determination, right?
Well, I'll read to Your Honor the language, because it says...
And you're looking probably at subdivision 3,
correct.
Paragraph 2?
Subdivision 3, Part 2. So there's no dispute in this case that all procedural requirements for advancement were met. So then we get to 2, and it's, I'll read the prefatory language as well. Subject to the provisions of Subdivision 4, if a person is made or threatened to be made a party to a proceeding, the person is entitled, upon written request to the limited liability company, to payment or reimbursement by the limited liability company of reasonable expenses, including attorney's fees and disbursements, incurred by the person in advance of the final disposition of the proceeding, after a determination that the facts then known to those making the determination would not preclude indemnification under this section.
And so?
So we concern ourselves only with the facts known, and as the district court said,
to those making the determination, but is it appropriate to read that to say to those making the determination on behalf of the company?
No, Your Honor. For example, Corvascular makes this clear, as does Leyendecker, that this facts then known applies to the court. What does the court know at the time that it's making the advancement determination whether advancement is required?
I think Leyendecker talks about that the court needs to make an independent determination, whether the facts then known to the district court would not preclude indemnification under the statute.
That's right, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And this court elaborated on that in Corvascular, and it said, the statute, and this is the predecessor to 0408, this is the 322B.699.
So why would that, I'm sorry to cut you off, I'm just trying to move us forward. Why would that language in Leyendecker, whether the facts then known to the district court, why does that not require the district court to resolve disputed facts and make findings of fact?
For one thing, Your Honor, this determination is made at the very start of a case. The whole point of an advancement statute is to avoid litigation over the advancement. It's to allow for this preliminary procedure where the person seeking advancement provides an affidavit and, an undertaking and states that the requirements for indemnification, good faith belief that they're all met. And at that point, we look at what facts are absolutely established. What are the non-disputed facts? Your Honor is very correct. It's very rare that at the forefront of a case, we're going to have a long list of undisputed facts. And the undisputed facts here do not establish, as the district court itself found, do not establish that Mr. Maceda is not entitled to ultimate indemnification. That's what the district court would have had to find in order to say that advancement is not required at this early stage in the litigation.
And what are the undisputed facts in this matter?
The facts are that Mr. Maceda was authorized to perform actions on behalf of the company. That's never been disputed by Mr. Tejeda. Mr. Tejeda has never disputed that Mr. Maceda ran the day-to-day operations of the company. That's established. Never disputed that includes paying employee wages.
But it's also not disputed that Tejeda, whether it was right or wrong, told him not to disperse. You acknowledge that.
I don't know that that's an undisputed fact.
You're trying to answer the question by saying it's a legal requirement to pay your employees, but that's the ultimate determination. I mean, it's acknowledged that Tejeda said, don't do it, and he did it.
That hasn't been established. The district court wrote that in the order. I understand that. But even in Mr. Maceda's affidavit.
I thought that was in his affidavit that I think it was in your argument that he agreed that he was told not to do it, but then he says, but I had to.
Well, Your Honor, there's
the law.
I'm looking at paragraph 9 of Mr.
You even said that in your argument today, that he was required to pay it. These were employees.
I think we're talking about two different things, Your Honor. Your Honor's first question was, is it undisputed that Mr. Tejeda directed Mr. Maceda not to pay them? That would be a hotly disputed fact because Mr. Maceda's has put under oath that he was authorized to pay these employees and that Mr. Tejeda never revoked that authorization. At most, that would be a disputed fact for the district court to sort out. But it's not an undisputed fact that Mr. Maceda was in any way directed not to pay employee wages. And in fact, there's nothing in Mr. Tejeda's affidavit that says it would have been improper for Mr. Maceda to pay employee wages. And on top of that, Your Honor, we're talking about employment retention benefit funds, which Mr. Tejeda was not allowed to retain personally in any event. There's only certain uses that those funds can be put to, and Mr. Maceda used those funds for the benefit of the company. And if Mr. Tejeda wants to dispute that, that's a dispute that must be worked out over the course of this litigation. But at this early stage, the advancement stage, Mr. Maceda is entitled to that because the only undisputed facts do not preclude ultimate indemnification. And that's the end of the analysis. It would make advancement pointless if, in any case, someone who makes an accusation, as Mr. Tejeda has done here, that requires the employee or person seeking advancement to go through the whole process of fighting it out in the district court, fighting it out in front of this court. That's just not how interim relief in the form of advancement works. It would defeat the purpose. And this court made that clear in Leyendecker, talking about referencing case law from Delaware, such as the Tafine case, that you lose the benefit of advancement if you don't receive it early on in the litigation. And here, where the procedural requirements are met and the only substantive issue which we've discussed has been met, and the district court itself said that ultimate indemnification is not foreclosed, advancement is required. And that is really the beginning and end of the analysis.
The phrase not preclude, does that mean, is that equivalent to saying would compel indemnification?
No, and that's very important that Your Honor sees that distinction. Because not preclude, you're not proving something, you're showing that it's not ultimately precluded.
Not necessarily precluded?
Not necessarily precluded, right. That's the key distinction, and that's where we're at the advancement stage. We're not showing, as the district court erroneously decided and as respondent argues, that you need to prove entitlement to indemnification at this stage. You're showing that it's not precluded, that ultimate indemnification is not precluded at this stage by the only known facts. That's it. So unless Your Honors have any further questions, I will reserve time for rebuttal, but I'll end my argument here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Tome. You will have an opportunity for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for respondent, as I said earlier, please identify yourself and your client, and then you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Stephen R. Little, on behalf of the respondents, Katrina's 2 LLC and Lorenzo Tejeda. Mr. Tejeda is here in the courtroom with me today.
Mr. Little, before you wrap into what you prepared, your memorandum that was in response to the motion, the initial motion for advancement, starts out with saying the advancement of the fees is moot. Why did you say that?
There's no fees to advance. Mr. Maceda closed the business and left a significant amount of debt owing to the company. There's no assets of the company. There's nothing in the record shows that the company has any money.
All right. I just heard opposing counsel in response to my question on that say that the business is, the LLC is still up and running.
The business is not operating anything and it has significant debt.
There,
I think from a practical...
very sparse Minnesota case law, not federal case law, in terms of interpreting all of this. So is there anything that you came across that said, you know, if the business is shuttered, and it was shuttered because one individual closed the doors, that the issue of advancement is off the table?
I wasn't able to, Your Honor, and I guess I didn't really focus on the mootness doctrine in preparing respondents' appellate brief and preparing for today. I mean, I'm aware of it.
Question. I saw that in your papers, and I just wondered where that was going. Okay, thank you.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. So the district court was right. All it did was rely on undisputed facts, and the undisputed facts are that Mr. Maceda paid his family members in preference to retaining funds for the company. The district court was correct in saying that Minnesota Statute 322C0408, the moving party has the burden of establishing that they're entitled to advancement. Unlike 317A 251, which Leyendecker analyzes. So there's an additional provision in MnSTAT 322C 0408, section 6A3. And the district court addressed appellant's argument.
Counsel, why is it a... You're saying it's undisputed that he paid his family in preference to retaining funds within the business. And I think the district court went on to say then that represents a failure to act in good faith.
Correct.
And so you are saying it's undisputed that he acted in bad faith?
No, I'm not saying that, Your Honor. I'm saying the only facts that the district court relied on were the fact that Mr. Macedo was paying his family members, including his ex-wife, in preference of retaining funds for the company.
But if the argument is there's nothing wrong with that, the district court didn't analyze whether that's right or wrong to do, right? I mean, I think the argument, one of the arguments at the base of this, I mean, your client is suing him for claims based on his having done that, and he's saying, presumably defending, saying, I had to, right? That's what we heard.
Correct.
What makes it undisputed, then, if he had to, and in fact it will be decided ultimately whether he had to, why is it an undisputed fact that it was not done in good faith? Why is that undisputed?
Respondent's not arguing that it's undisputed that he acted in good faith.
Didn't you allege that the ex-wife was paid substantial fees over and above an employee wage?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, then that wouldn't that be the fact in dispute?
That is a disputed fact, correct.
So we don't know whether paying the employees... The judge finding that paying the employees was detrimental to the company are the only facts we know, not whether it was right or wrong.
Correct. Yes. I mean, this was very early on. The scheduling order had just been issued. We didn't even have a protective order in place. We had conducted no discovery. Appellant immediately brought a motion for advancement, then brought a request for reconsideration, and everything's been on hold since that motion. And so we're here in front of the court with, I think, what's a question of first impression, interpreting 322C0408, 6A3, on what the standard of review is on a district court's determination based on undisputed facts.
Well, I thought you said in your brief it's de novo. Wasn't that your brief?
Interpretation of a statute is de novo, but as I was listening to Your Honor's questions, I think this court needs to make a determination on what the standard of review is on a district court's determination under the subject statute on undisputed facts, and I think that it's probably more applicable to use an abuse of discretion standard in that determination, in that analysis.
What's the you say there's an interpretation question. Take it outside of these facts. What in the statute needs to be interpreted? What language is missing in interpretation right now by case law?
I don't think there is any, but there's no case law interpreting this statute. Leyendecker is interpreting 317A 251, which is the corporation statute. So that does not include sub 6A3, which the LLC statute includes. And so...
So what language in this statute do we need to interpret, do you think?
I think it's 6A3 determining the moving party has the burden of proving that they're entitled to indemnification, unlike the corporation statute, where it's almost reversed, where the party opposing indemnification needs to prove or establish that they're not entitled to it.
I mean, I'm just wondering whether, I mean, if the statute says it, I'm just wondering where you think, what the key interpretation issue, it seems more like it's an application of the statute here.
I think you're right, Your Honor.
Okay. And then, I mean, just hopping back for a second, when I look at the findings, paid in preference to retaining, which means he paid instead of retaining the funds, right? I know it uses the word preference, but it's basically he paid rather than keep in the
right.
company, right? Okay, and then it goes on to say improper, bad faith, or not in good faith, it's improper, et cetera. Would you agree that that question, whether it's not in good faith, whether it's improper, would you agree that that's in dispute? Or do you disagree that that's in dispute? Does he agree that it was improper and not in good faith to pay his?
I don't think appellant does, no.
Okay. So those are, that's disputed, presumably.
Presumably, yes, okay. Your Honor. And I think that's why the district court had that last sentence in the order denying the motion to reconsider, where it said for the reasons, I'm sorry, I'm reading the wrong thing.
So if he, so why are those known facts? Explain then why the known facts, if the known facts means undisputed facts, why do the, tell me if they don't, why do they demonstrate that indemnification is barred, prohibited?
Well, the district court applied the known facts to the statute and found that the appellant had not satisfied his burden under the statute to be entitled to indemnification. And so this court has to determine what standard of review there is for a finder of fact making that determination. And I would argue that it's an abuse of discretion standard.
Why? All right, we'll take that standard of review. And if the known fact, an undisputed fact, is that he paid his family members, that it's very much disputed whether that was right or wrong, improper. Even under an abuse, why isn't it an abuse of discretion to deny advancement? Because the facts known at that point, he paid them. Maybe there's a reason for it and it's legit. That doesn't preclude indemnification, does it? In other words, if he wins a lawsuit.
Right, but we're talking about two different things. One is the advancement versus indemnification.
But the advancement standard depends on after determination of the facts known to those making the determination would not preclude indemnification. I mean, indemnification is there in determining whether you advance the money or not, right?
Right, and I understand the court's, you know, based on these very limited facts that we have, it's basically just the summons and complaint and the answer and then a couple of affidavits regarding the motion. So there's all kinds of facts in dispute. Respondents argue that Mr. Maceda was operating this thing as his own private bank account. He was operating an adjoining business called Domingos, and he was laundering money through Domingos, and he was paying his ex-wife fees for catering tips, which had nothing to do with what she was actually putting in for labor. He was using the credit card to buy trips to Mexico to visit his current wife, and he was spending money on Ubers and hotels and all kinds of things. And all of these things are going to be supported by documents and evidence and testimony, but we just didn't get there before this motion. And so the district court just...
How has he failed, given that they're allegations, he disputes them, how has he failed to carry his burden under this statute when we read it that he's entitled to advancement? What did he need to do that he didn't do here?
I don't know, Your Honor, but the district court found that he was not entitled to it under 6A3 because he had the burden of proving it, that he was acting in good faith, that it wasn't self-serving.
The court said he received an improper benefit from his actions by paying family members rather than business debt.
Correct.
Now, whether that's right or wrong, we don't know, but that was the determination of the trial court.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Did the trial court resolve disputed facts?
Not that I see in the court's orders.
And I guess, you know, I asked your opposing counsel this question earlier, whether when the facts are in dispute, whether a district court either must or may resolve them in order to resolve this kind of thing, or whether the district court is confined to undisputed facts. Do you have any?
I think the statute and the sparse case law indicates that the district court has to rely on undisputed facts. So it's more of like a summary judgment kind of standard.
In which cases are you looking, case or case law?
Well, cases?
Judge Connolly in Corvascular, which is relied on heavily by appellant, indicates while few facts may be known in lawsuits where bad faith is the central issue, that's this, the district court must still evaluate those few known facts to determine whether any of them preclude indemnification. So tell me what you think are the few known facts here that support your position.
The district court correctly found, and the pleadings indicate that Mr. Maceda was pretty much solely operating Katrina's 2 LLC and was employing family members, including his ex-wife, and was paying them, whether or not it was for actual work involved or whether or not it was for spousal maintenance, we don't really know at this point. The record's not clear on that, but the district court found that that was not acting in good faith.
So the district court was basically saying you paid people, family, and didn't pay business debt. Is that a fair reason then to exclude an advancement?
That's what the district court determined, correct.
There was no dispute that the business was heavily in debt?
No.
That's a known fact.
I believe so, yes, Your Honor.
So should we take guidance from Leyendecker?
I think the district court was right that it really doesn't apply. It's a different statute. It's a different standard.
Wait, why is it a different standard? It seems like all the statutes here are practically identical. They all have the same language. The statutes, and I'm thinking of the LLC statute, the 302A business corporation statute, and the nonprofit statute.
Right, and the district court, in its November 24, 2024 order, I notice my time is almost up. May I finish?
Yeah, please do.
If you look at the court's November 24, 2024 order, the court holds the most important difference between the two statutes is that in the portion of the statute concerning judicial determinations of entitled to advancement, section 322C.04.08 contains an additional clause omitted from section 317A.251, which Leyendecker was interpreting.
Wait, okay, which page? I'm sorry. Where are you reading from? I'm trying to find that place.
Sure, it's on page 5. It's quoted on page 5 of respondent's brief.
I'm looking at the order.
Right. This is the November 24, 2024 order denying the request for permission to bring motion to reconsider. It was an index 25.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. And so then the district court correctly distinguishes Leyendecker and 317A.521 because 322C.04.08 includes the party seeking indemnification or payment or reimbursement of expenses pursuant to this clause has the burden of establishing that the person is entitled to indemnification or payment or reimbursement of expenses. That's subdivision 6A.3. The court went on to say, thus, in insisting that the court come to the same conclusion as Leyendecker, defendant is asking the court to ignore this very relevant textual difference between the statutes. Unless there's any other questions, I see my time is up.
It appears there are no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Little.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Tome, you have an opportunity for a rebuttal argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. This court talked about what the burden and standard is in Corvascular very clearly, and it is that there the party seeking advancement is not certainly disqualified from ultimate indemnification. That's what the ultimate, that's what the undisputed facts have to show, certain disqualification. And that's interpreting the plain language of the statute. Now, returning to the question of what if the LLC doesn't have the fees to advance payment? Well, first of all, that's nowhere in the statute does it say that ability to pay or not is to be taken into consideration. So that's not a bar to receiving advancement. But beyond that, Mr. Tejeda has been doing whatever he wants with this LLC and its funds. So, and he's just simply making a representation that it doesn't have any funds to pay an advancement order.
Can I ask you what you thought our standard of review is? I mean, do you think it's de novo?
It's de novo because what we're talking about is what is the burden under the statute? What does Mr. Maceda have to show in order to get advancement today?
But
does
he
have to
look at facts, not facts known at the time, not facts. I forgot how it's
the facts then known is the language.
Then known as of the date of the order.
Yes. And the question is, what are the facts then known for purposes of the statute? Can they be facts then known if the district court says, well, there could be facts that go the other way?
How do we say what the facts, how can we as a reviewing court then say these are the facts that were then known? I mean, that to me seems an abuse of discretion standard to look at what the trial court said the facts were then known.
Well, if your Honor were to apply.
We can't make findings. We can't say that wasn't the fact then known, or we can't say that is the fact then known.
The tricky part, Your Honor, is the application of the statute to what the court says are the facts then known. So what the court said was, if Maceda is correct, and there are these ameliorating circumstances, and his payment of employees was fine and done in good faith, then ultimate indemnification is not precluded. So any finding of wrongdoing by the district court would be an abuse of discretion, because as opposing counsel
court just said he paid the people. I don't care if they're relatives or not. He paid the people and didn't pay the debt.
And Your Honor, the district court acknowledged that there was a payment made and then grafted onto that fact that it was wrongful. And you heard opposing counsel say, it's not undisputed that Maceda did not act in good faith. Well, the district court made a finding that Maceda did not act in good faith, but that's not undisputed. That's disputed with facts.
Well, he said it wasn't in the best interest of Katrina's to pay people instead of the expenses.
And that's hotly disputed, Your Honor, for many reasons that we would have to get into below and will get into below over the course of the litigation. And I think opposing counsel did a good job of explaining why. He said he's going to support his accusations with documents and testimony. But at this stage, they're mere allegations. There is no bad faith acting contrary to the best interest of the company. The undisputed facts simply don't establish that. And opposing counsel recognizes that and acknowledges it today, candidly, before the court. The district court simply erred in taking a fact and grafting onto it the allegations that Mr. Tejeda made and said this was somehow wrongful and somehow doesn't give you advancement today. And the district court really drove the nail into the coffin by saying it's so undisputed that if Maceda is able to establish his version of the facts, which he has put in the record with affidavit testimony, then Mr. Maceda will be entitled to ultimate indemnification. So the facts then known do not preclude ultimate indemnification, and that's the beginning and end of the analysis for purposes of the advancement statute. Corvascular makes that clear. The statute, the plain language of the statute makes that clear. And so for those reasons, Your Honor, unless Your Honors have any further questions, we will respectfully ask that the decision be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Toe. Thank you to both attorneys for your arguments. The case is submitted. The court will issue its opinion within 90 days in writing. Because that is the last case on our argument calendar today, we are now adjourned. Okay, good.